That literally means that we won't move forward. We're just coming up. It's more like you have a wound and you're just putting a plaster on it.
Why not allow Africa to develop so that your own, their own citizens can come and find jobs?
The system that we are operating is a system that did not see any significant departure from the actual owners of the system.
Education is the most powerful weapon that you can use to change the world. So said Africa's iconic leader, Nelson Mandela. But decades of colonial rule has left a continent broken from its history. And generations on, the struggle to decolonize education continues. Welcome to this week's Africa Now show. We're coming to you from the streets of the Mozambican capital, Maputo. It makes sense to explore this week's topic, the decolonization of African education, from here, because nearly half of this country's population, more than 8 million people, are illiterate. They cannot read, write, or do simple arithmetic. 52 years after independence from Portugal, who is to blame for this poor state of affairs? I caught up with Professor José Matmulane of the Pedagogical University of Maputo. Professor, thank you so much for joining us.
That's a pleasure.
Do you think the Mozambique education system should be changed in any way to reflect more of a Mozambican culture and a Mozambican history, and perhaps less of a Portuguese colonial Western perspective?
Right now, I think that the Mozambican education system is still very, very dependent. It's still feeling a lack of local content. It's one part of the issue, but another one is that the quality itself of the education, the curriculum, is not reflecting the needs of today's needs of the world. Requirements for education for Mozambicans. What it means? It means that it's not competitive. The curriculum is not competitive. In one part, it's due to the language used, is Portuguese, so for the system, education system. But people don't speak much, don't understand much of Portuguese. They speak local languages, and there is no investment on the development of local languages.
Why not?
Why not? I used to say, the government is not investing on that, and government wouldn't do that. In one hand, because the Minister of Education that rules on that in this area, so the Minister of Education is not independent at all. I used to call it not the Minister of Education but the NGO actually, because they are financed by donors, and the donors dictate what should be taught. Students start studying East history and geography only from grade 8, and it's too late. In the basic education, we don't have that. And you have now students at university who don't know the history of colonialism, how did Portugal rule here. Because there's a process of wiping out the memory of colonialism.
Who are the donors?
The donors are the Western countries. That's not a secret. If you go to the documents to find out who is financing the Minister of Education, is that are the Western countries, Western organizations, and it undermines the sovereignty of the country actually, because. If people don't know the history where they're coming from, they don't know the geography, the reality, the environment they're living on, the richness, the resources the country has. From grade 8, it means not all of them have the possibility to get to know profoundly the richness of the country, because from grade 8 they go until grade 10. And after that, if he chooses, for example, the section of natural science with biology, for example, he will never see any more history and geography. So.
You yourself studied in Russia.
Yeah.
Do you think that even, you say, from grade 8, mm-hmm. students are taught history and geography, It's ignoring even the history and geography of countries like Russia and China and Eastern countries. And again, it's very much the perspective of America, Europe, and that part of the world.
That's pretty sure. Yeah, that's right. Because when I talk about, let's take for instance, the World War II, for example. Okay, we know much more about Montgomery and so Normandy and all the rest about Stalingrad, about what happened. I mean, in the Soviet Union, what the Russians did. We just hear it at my time. Actually, it was just a fraction of that. Yeah, it's, and all the victory, all the power, all the deeds are Western. So that's the Western perspective of everything.
Not to move away from a kind of pro-Portuguese, pro-colonial history is also because the powers that be, the donors, don't want to have any kind of payback, I don't know if that's the right word, or any kind of responsibility for the history.
That's, I would say so, but it's not about, the system is not pro-Portuguese, actually. It's not in that sense, but it's in the sense that also, we're not going after. I mean, to ask for responsibilities for what happened, along all these centuries. There is a saying. I say, well, Mozambican people are very pacific. They forgot everything. They're not demanding any. Bills, obviously, so far from Portugal. And my theory is that it's not because Mozambican people are pacific. It's just because they don't know. And this is being this memory is being deliberately erased. So that's what's happening. And afterwards, these students today, okay, the students tomorrow, they're ministers, for example, okay, they will have to defend the interests of this country. But how will they do that if they don't know the reality? They don't know, they hear the history. They will continue with this this new colonial system, because then they don't know, they will implement whatever the donors, whatever the partners say so, ask and demand them to do, because they don't have an identity.
But what do the donors have to benefit from Mozambicans not knowing their history?
They benefit everything. So they still have the power on all resources of the country. Okay, by impeding the country to develop, by cutting them the consciousness of the country itself, man, of the nationality of the roots. Well, it's easier to manipulate, easier to control, easier to gain. Let's see what's happening now in the north of the country, for example.
Do you think it's a uniquely Mozambican problem, or do you think it's a problem that many African countries have?
Yeah, it's many Africans, not Mozambican, almost Mozambican, but there are some countries who are trying to fight that. Okay, they're trying to fight that. They have taken at least the financing of the education system in their own hands. But we're not still on that path. We're still depending on the donors to finance the education, and we've seen from year to year less and less capabilities. I mean, less and less knowledge about not only local Mozambican history, but general universal history. Or if they have it, of course we know. What history they have. I mean, me myself, I was, let's say, a victim of that history, because I was good at history at school, but about world history, it's all about Western history, actually.
The colonial powers have been gone for decades.
Yes.
So what you're saying actually suggests that they're not gone. You still have the colonization of education and ultimately the colonization of ideas and the mind.
That's it. Colonialism, okay, is gone, but we have the neo-colonialism. So it's still very firm in the continent. That's the battle for sovereignty that many countries are. I mean, African countries, they're not still fighting it. They're still too dependent for the Western finance for every program. okay? And of course, we say, for example, in Mozambique, we have, I mean, the local, the own revenues, okay, for the budget, I think they could take some percentage of that, say, okay, guys, you want help, let's build roads, let's build schools, let's build bridges, but education will be on our own hands, but it's not happening. Someone is pushing the agenda. And the agenda is it? It's my what I think. It's about to wipe them this history, because we see now, again, students who don't know, for example, what history, what geography did Portugal teach to Mozambicans during the colonial era. But it's too, again, it's too late, because the young generation need to know that. When the school should supply that, should teach that, but it's not happening. Because of the neo-colonialism, that's what it's going on right now. And again, there's a fight. We're now living in a time where, and the global say potences, yeah, the global countries, the biggest countries are fighting for a new world order. Yeah, that's. I think maybe there we can have a chance. But first of all, I think now countries like Russia, China, Brazil, and so on should take this fight to the right end, so that African countries could jump from this European Western neo-colonialism to what was being called world order of justice. Okay, so that's it.
Professor Matamolane is not a lone voice in Mozambique. We caught up with students and professors who expressed the same point of view.
The people here in Mozambique are learning what the international context want to study. Sometimes we don't learn about what Mozambique need at that moment. For example, we have so many young people who need jobs here. But if you go into the school, we don't teach the people who to create our own job. We have so many people there are make some protests sometimes because he needs a job, he have a family and etc. But we teach here the people to find one job, not to create the opportunities to open one company, for example. So that is why sometimes it's a big problem for our contest. So I think the most big problem here in Mozambique when I teach, for example, the political science, is because we forget the old heroes from the local history here in Mozambique, for example, in some countries in Africa. I think maybe we can put the old things, those leaders in one book. For example, we have so many people are like, for example, the Abraham Lincoln. It's one example. But sometimes we forget we have here in Mozambique, for example, Samora Machel. We have here in South Africa, one here in South Africa, Nelson Mandela. But we import, for example, the history from the other countries, for example, Mahatma Gandhi. It's one example for us. But we have the other actors that are very important for the history of the African continent, the political context. We import the political things from the other countries around the world. One example is from the Western countries. We import the democracy from here, from our countries, and sometimes the democracy here is not function. Here in Mozambique, we teach the people to find one job. The government have your responsibility on that side, but the Western countries sometimes have one responsibility for that in that time, because the Western countries make the investment in the African continent in the areas where it's most important for their interest.
The very first thing is to get a society involved in the sense of having teachers being part of the design of the curriculum, having the community involved in terms of having older people who can tell the history of the Africa and somehow give us some feedback of what had been going on, because in Mozambique, the history is told orally.
Firstly, say that our education system is failing in the training of teachers. Not all the trained teachers are trained to teach in our system. Therefore, children end up lagging a lot by moving to one subsystem without having assimilated the subject matter of the other subsystem.
Colonization was not only about controlling a country's resources and economy. Just as dangerous, or perhaps even more so, was the colonization of the mind, the attempt by European powers to get African populations to believe that they were nothing more than hewers of wood and drawers of water. For generations, Africans had their own system of education, but this changed with the arrival of missionaries and later colonial powers. We cross now to the Bono State of Nigeria for a brief evolution of its colonial education system to where it is today.
Formal Western education began in Nigeria by the British in 1840, right to the moment of the country's northern and southern amalgamation in 1914. Today, the education system in Nigeria for the last 60 years has continued to use the colonial teaching template, which some believes does not reflect the true reality of preparing students for future challenges.
Some of our own students here and then other people, they will now decide to go to other countries. After learning, after graduating here and then developing themselves, they try to go to other countries, becoming an ambassador in order to develop other countries, instead of coming back to their own country and try to see that this country improves. So these are some of the challenges we face.
The system that we are operating is a system that did not see any significant departure from the actual owners of the system. The educational system in Nigeria has its owners. Who are the owners? First, it was the Western Christian missionaries that introduced the system to make us appreciate the letters, for us to read, understand, and interpret the gospel of Christ. And in a situation where we don't adapt to the changing circumstances, we produce people that are not relevant into the labor market. You have a very huge labor market. You are hiring expatriates that have the prerequisite qualification for them to man your labor market. So those that were produced by the Nigerian universities into the labor market are not employable.
Africa is the continent of the future. Why not allow Africa to develop so that their own citizens can come and find jobs? They are protesting all over for lack of job. Why not allow Africa to fix the basic infrastructure so that they are welcome? The people from Europe, from America are always welcome, but their own government are not helping. They are not helping us to fix the basic so as to employ those experts from all over the world.
Further south, in South Africa, the topic is also hugely relevant and part of a nationwide debate, specifically in the Eastern Cape, where the first school strictly for Africans opened. The consensus is that decolonization of education does not ask African students to rewrite history, but it allows Africans the academic freedom to write their own. I'm joined now by a former president of the Student Representative Council of a predominantly colonial institution, Rhodes University. Thanks so much for joining us. Many do not understand the meaning behind the idea or dialogue around curriculum decolonization. Maybe if we can just start with that. When we say decolonization of curriculum, what does it mean?
The question of decolonization is about sort of undoing the sense of alienation that the education system specifically higher education system as it stands, creates for the children of the colonized.
And what does this do to societies of African countries currently?
Instead of looking like anything that looks like Africa, specifically those universities that are the result of white hegemony, right? So what that has done is that it creates a sense of alienation. It creates young Black children who do not know that one day they can become academics, or who do not think of that as a viable choice, right? Because the space in itself is a space in which you always find yourself in conflict with, right? So what that does is that it creates a sense where people limit themselves, specifically where the academy is concerned, and specifically Black people who limit themselves. And, you know, for us, the education that we receive is so that we can go and get employed and leave the university space. But we don't see ourselves as legitimate participants within the university space.
Where exactly do we continue to see the effects of colonized education in Africa? Are there any specific areas that you can point to?
So we're all very comfortable making a Black woman, for example, the head of the Africa wing, right? But globally, who is in charge of the big corporations? Globally, who is in charge of the institutions that we aspire to be a part of? So I think it's evident in everyday society, and it's the exclusion that has come to define basically what it is to exist as a poor Black person, even in Africa.
A lot of people tend to say it's not really about the languages taught at schools, whether your exam paper is written in your home language or not, but it's rather about the content that seeks to liberate the mind of African children. Do you agree with this?
I definitely agree. It's more about the content, but language is an integral part of decolonization. Just looking at the South African reality, we have young South Africans who are taught English in isiXhosa or isiZulu, you know, you're taught iVerb siSenzi, you know, and that's how you learn language. But you then come into an academic space that does not allow you to express yourself in your home language. And I think it's an integral part of decolonization.
And in your own words, what would a decolonized educational system look like in Africa? You can give us an example of what such a curriculum would cover.
I think a decolonized education looks like dignity. It looks like students getting an education with dignity. Students not being made to grovel, students not being made to beg for the bare essentials. It means us being mindful of where our students come from, who they are, the types of challenges they face, and also seeing it as our responsibilities as those of us in universities to actively plan and strategize for those struggles, to meet our students halfway. And I think it really boils down to a question of dignity. Who are university spaces for? Who must live a dignified life in university? And I think in Africa, the answer to that question is everyone.
Mklaga Nipo Mahlangu, thank you so much for joining us. This next report from South Africa adds to the debate by taking a look at the concept of decolonization and the readiness of governments to implement a new curriculum. Apartheid ended some 30 years ago, but what is astonishing is that three decades on, the country's national curriculum has remained relatively unchanged.
What I have in my hand currently is a grade 10 history book. It is used by a 15-year-old in one of South Africa's high school. And this book continues to be a clear demonstration of an education system that continues to damage the minds of young African children. It also reflects the colonial mindset. And more than anything, it reflects the colonial times, because the content depicted in this book are not really that of African content, but mostly Western content.
I'm reading about a content that does not cater for me as a Black student, that does not speak to me. It's about we come up with white solutions to African issues. Let me try and edit this. Not white solution, but like Western knowledge or Western methods of solving solutions for African situations, whereas that literally means that we won't move forward. We're just coming up. It's more like you have a wound and you're just putting a plaster on it.
If we can start now to decolonize the curriculum, maybe in 50 years' time, we will be learning using our African languages.
Of course, this is nothing new. Activists have been fighting for a colonized curriculum for years now, but all of that has fallen on deaf ears.
For me, it's about a process of trying to restructure the realities that we have on our continent. Those realities were destroyed, undermined by colonization. Look, even though the colonizers left, they didn't leave us to our own devices. They are still plundering the African continent. The continent is rich with resources. They are not going to just, you know, leave it as is.
When I was in high school, I remember no more than a handful of instances when black people, African or indigenous people were mentioned in my classroom. We would spend a lot of time going through books from Western cultures like To Kill a Mockingbird, but lessons on apartheid and the beginning and the consequences of apartheid were not as long as some of those lessons. For RT, Nolu Vuyokunge in Johannesburg.
Moving now to West Africa, which was colonized by the French, the trend is much the same. In Burkina Faso, the school curriculum and practices are still structured to affirm French worldviews, culture, values, and language.
The relationship between France and Francophone African countries is strongly marked by the French language, the official working language in most of the administrations of these countries. Despite the independences given yearly in the 60s, French appears to resist to the wind of decolonization in Francophone countries.
French language is a tool of domination, but how are we going to do it? We are already trapped. We can't escape like this anymore. To escape, you have to fight. If you are at school, you can work in companies tomorrow. So you have to learn French to be able to express yourself.
Suppose we have to drop French. Which language are we going to choose? This can then perhaps create some conflict between the different ethnic groups. It's segregation. Now, the French language, if we have to leave it and start with other languages today, everything must be started from scratch. Assuming that we may have chosen more, how many teachers today understand more? Do they have to learn more before returning to teach? I really think it's complicated.
In 1983, Captain Thomas Sankara, former president of Burkina Faso, who understood that the cornerstone of decolonization was French, launched massive programs for adults to learn how to write and read in local languages. He renamed the country name, shifting from Haute Volta to Burkina Faso, a typically local language name, which means country of upright citizen. For him, this was the first step to get rid of the colon. Wazin Louis Woulon, RT, Ouagadougou.
I hope this week's show has given you some food for thought. We have received overwhelmingly positive feedback for our previous episodes. You can catch us on various social media platforms and always feel free to drop us a line. A big shout out to all our followers on Rumble. We really do take note of your comments and appreciate them. Until then, from me and the team, ciao.